worthless, filled with guilt, distraught, not worth anything. You'll never make it. No one cares. Not important, unloved, insignificant. This is how I define myself. This is who I thought I was. I grew up with a typical Seventh Adventist family. My mom was a teacher, my dad was a pastor, but I got to grow up at summer camps, and that's, in my mind, every kid's dream. I got to wakeboard and run through the woods barefoot, chase snakes. You wouldn't catch me doing that now, but back then it was awesome. And I grew up at Camp Yorktown Bay in Arkansas, and we would spend lots of our summers with the Voth family, and they had two kids, Jake and Jordan. We would spend camping trips, wakeboarding, tubing, tons of time with them. It was really fun. And I really, really looked up to Dave and Lisa, their parents, even at a young age of 8. I wanted to be just like Lisa. She was so kind and loving, and she was the most spiritual person that I knew at that time. We got a phone call after we'd moved to Coeur d'Alene on our way to school that Dave and Lisa had died in a car accident. It was a 40-minute drive, and I cried the whole way. I remember feeling instantly numb to the world and just filled with questions that, why could this happen to me? This is kind of ridiculous. This doesn't happen to people I know or my family. And there was something in me that didn't quite believe it, but it was true. And we went down to their funeral, and their cousins asked me to sing, and I'd never sang up front before, and this was gonna be my first time. And to this day, I can't remember the words that came out of my mouth. I was just numb the whole time. And after I sat down, this bitterness and kind of anger started to settle inside me, and I kind of just pushed it to the back of my head, went on with life, and continued school at LCJA. And a while later, something happened to my family that was really unfair, and I didn't understand it at that time, and I still completely don't, but my mom was so emotionally and physically unstable that my dad had to be there for her 24/7. And I just tried to help out how I could. My brother was kind of doing his own thing at that time. And I kind of took it on myself to be the face of the family, to let everybody know that we were okay and we're happy and nothing was gonna tear us apart. So I would go to school every day and put on this face of happiness and pretend like everything was fine. And people would come up to me all the time and they'd say, "Man, Shayla, you have such a positive attitude. How are you so happy all the time?" And little did they know, I would go home and cry myself to sleep every night because I hated this life that I was living. I started spending a lot of time with my aunt and uncle and their three little girls because they became the family that I didn't really have at that time. And I just started to slip away deeper and deeper into this depression and darkness. I really, really hated who I was becoming. And since I didn't have a problem that anybody could see, I kind of got forgotten about in my family. So I thought that maybe if I was prettier, maybe if I played more instruments or sang more or got better grades, people would pay more attention to me or just acknowledge that I was even there. So I stopped eating and I threw up anything that I would eat. I became numb to the world and everything around me. I just wanted to be able to feel something. So I started to cut myself because I could feel pain. It got to the point where I didn't want to be here another day. I did not want to be a part of this life that was so cruel. The only thing that kept me from ending my life was my family, my six little cousins, because I didn't care what happened to me, but I cared what would happen to them and how they would have to deal with that. I didn't accept God's love because I didn't love myself. In 2 Corinthians 12, 8 and 10 was a verse that I found during this time that shook my world. It says, "My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in your weakness." I couldn't wrap my head around this thought. The more weak I was, the more powerful God could be. This seemed crazy to me. I did find something, though, that really helped me understand, and it's called agape. I'm sure you guys have heard this word before, agape feast, agape vespers. But I found something in this book by Rob Bell that really just stuck out to me. I'm going to read it to you. It says, "Agape doesn't love somebody because they're worthy. It makes them worthy by the strength and power of its love. Agape doesn't love somebody because they're beautiful. It loves in such a way that it makes them beautiful." God is agape. Agape is God. There is a love because, a love in order to, a love for the purpose of, and then there is a love, period. And that love is agape. In Ephesians 3:16 through 19, it says, "I pray that out of his glorious riches, he may strengthen you with power through his Spirit in your inner being, so that Christ may dwell in your hearts through faith. And I pray that you, being rooted and established in love, may have power together with all the saints to grasp how wide and long and high and deep is the love of Christ." God's love is wide. It covers the breadth of our own experience and reaches out to the whole world. God's love is long. It continues the lengths of our lives, and it never stops. It is high because it rises to the heights of our celebration, and it is deep because it reaches to the depths of our discouragement, despair, and even death. Our understanding about God will shape everything about how we live. And what we do comes out of who we think we are. My understanding of God was that he was this unfair and cold thing far, far away from me. But what I'm discovering more and more every day is just the opposite. You guys, we are worth dying for. And your worth will never come from how pretty you are, the family you're part of, whether or not you ace that chemistry test today. Your worth comes from God and God alone. And it is a gift that he is so willing to give. He wants to be part of this apprenticeship with us. And if you follow that word back, the little Jewish boys would get together and they would find a rabbi. They would follow him and eat, sleep, drink, and live this rabbi's life because they wanted to be just like him. If you look at the disciples, they would follow and eat, sleep, drink, and live God's life because they wanted to be just like him. And for our God to even consider sharing that experience with us is amazing. Because without him, on our own, we are insignificant, selfish, sinful human beings. But we are children of God. We are fearfully and wonderfully made. In Romans 8, 16 and 17, it says, Abba, Father, the Spirit himself testifies with our spirit that we are God's children. Now, if we are children, then we are heirs, heirs of God and co-heirs with Christ. If indeed we share in his sufferings in order that we may also share in his glory. God wants to experience life with us. He wants to walk hand in hand. In 1 John 1, in 1 John 3, 1, it says, how great is the love the Father has lavished on us that we should be called children of God. And that is what we are. The reason the world does not know us is that it did not know him. We are God's children now. Not just sometime in the distant future, not just because you did anything or how you got there. We are his children now. Set free, made new, forgiven, alive, comforted, cared for, loved. Worth found in God. Significant. This is who I am because I am a child of God and my God defines me.